apologize for the slight delay, the technical difficulties. Welcome to this House Committee on Transportation Policy, February 10th, 2017. I would like to announce first that House Bill 2289 will be pulled from this agenda this morning, so that will shorten our meeting just a little bit. It appears there may be more work to do on that bill. And I would like to move to a public hearing on House Bill 2482 and House Bill 2458. And Mr. Walker, 2482, we have four people signed up to testify. I would like to call up first, I don't know if you have any preference, gentlemen, as to how you would like to be seated at the dais, but I'd like to call Paul Romaine and Mr. Poole. Mr. Poole has traveled quite some distance to be here today, so welcome, sir, to our committee. And I also have, but then we'll call up Mr. Campbell and Mr. MacArthur, if that's all right. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm representing the Oregon Fuels Association. Representative Bentz had this lame excuse about having to fly over to Ontario with the governor. So he will not be here
anything
today.
Anything to ditch
anything
us,
to
yep.
get out of coming
anything
to a hearing.
Anything to get out of committee, yep.
It's amazing what he'll do. But he put in these bills. We've been working very closely with him. And what Mr. Poole is here with me to talk to you about the realities from Ontario, about the reality of what happens in Eastern Oregon. What these bills do and what this whole debate over self-service does is recognize that there are significant differences between small population areas and large population areas, especially when it comes to an issue of fuel availability. And that's really the question out in Eastern Oregon. How many stations can actually stay open so that people can get fuel, and at what price? And what we're trying to do is craft something that doesn't go crazy, that basically takes into account the unique nature of a particular area. That's all we're trying to do here. Just a couple of things before Mr. Poole testifies. We are working very closely with AAA and on to make sure that there is a provision in the bill, in both bills, I'm assuming they may be end up being combined if they do move forward, that would recognize that people with disabilities get special service. That, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, is required. Washington State has a statute specifically on that, and we are fine with that. We understand it's where they buy the fuel at the exact same price that somebody would if they were not getting service. So we will be taking care of that the next time we come back to you. It was not in the original draft. So we are working very closely with them. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Poole and let him testify, and then I'll bat cleanup if necessary.
Very good.
Ralph, go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Ralph Poole. I'm a business owner in Ontario, Oregon. Campbell and Poole Distributing is a family-owned second-generation petroleum marketer. We've been in Eastern Oregon for more than 50 years. Unfortunately, Mr. Bentz and I crossed paths. He is over there. I've lost a building in that snowstorm as well, so it's nice to see that the governor and the rest of the representatives and the people that are paying attention to those kind of things are helping us out, because it truly is pretty much a disaster over in our neck of the woods. We have been in the marketing business, like I say, for over 50 years. We've seen quite a change over that period of time in the way of marketing gasoline at the retail level and at the cardlock level. I would like to address the House Bill 2458 first on a couple of notes. We used to be in the retail business. I had some convenience stores, had a truck stop. The cost of operation of those got to the point where it was just more than we could stomach, especially being on the Idaho-Oregon border. We were facing self-service in Idaho. Obviously, the cost associated with running service stations in Idaho was substantially less just because of the labor factor than it was in Eastern Oregon. So we got out of the retail business. We have 5 card locks in Eastern Oregon. And so some of those are in a little more metropolitan area, if you will. Ontario's 11,000 people. So in our area, that's a metropolitan area. I have one also in Unity, which probably has about a population of 40 people, relatively small. I would encourage the passage of 2458 because the design of the last change to allow self-service between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. was a good design for those people who are in larger communities, generally speaking, 8 to 10, 12, 15,000 people. The service stations there had the ability to offer self-service with a form of card acceptors. I have customers in Harper, Unity, French Glen. You look at some of the rural areas where there's one service station with in maybe 20, 30, 40 mile radius. In order for those people that were running those operations to allow self-service at 3 a.m. in the morning, they were going to have to change their dispensing equipment, put in card readers to accept a Visa or a MasterCard. That typically runs in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $25,000 to upgrade the dispenser, to upgrade all of the internal workings of phone lines and internet access and so on in order to accept cards. And several of those people just said, you know, we just don't sell enough, especially we have a friend, like I say, that markets in Harper, Oregon, and he said, I get, you know, people knocking on my door at 3 in the morning to open up because I'm out of gas or they're out of gas and they can't make it to town. But he said, I just as soon get up at 3 in the morning at this point because I can't justify $20,000 to $25,000. I don't have that to upgrade that. So by making a change to the ruling of to allow card locks to operate as a retail site, card locks already accept credit cards. They're proprietary cards, or many of you have seen CFN or Pacific Pride. It's just a matter of flipping a switch in there and allowing other cards to be used. So to allow a card lock to become a retail site instead of a non-retail site makes great sense from an economic standpoint and will allow to several of these smaller communities to have gasoline when they wouldn't normally have it. So I would encourage passage of 2458. I'd like to move on. I'd be glad to take questions if anybody has them, and I would do it.
Well, I want to stop for just one brief moment. I neglected to do something I'd like to do. I'd like to turn to Mr. Walker and have him just give us what the tenets of these two bills are. So my apologies for not laying the groundwork here.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Chairman Kuhn, members of the committee, somewhere in here.
And then I have some questions, certainly, and I'm sure the rest of the panel does as well.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Okay, Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 2458 modifies statute governing gas dispensing in a non-retail location, allowing self-service between the hours of 6 p.m. and 6 a.m., and allows installation of self-service device for payment, and allows retail customers to dispense Class 1 flammable liquids during certain hours. We have not requested a revenue or fiscal, and so we're just doing a public hearing at this time.
Okay, please. If there are specific questions to this specific bill, panel, would you like to raise them now? Why don't we do that, and then we'll move on to the second bill. Representative Evans, you have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question that spans both, but I think is focused on this first one.
Okay.
And it's more of just making sure I understood exactly what you said, because it isn't quite aligned with what I remember being told a year ago. When the bill came before the legislature to allow after-hours use, after-hours self-service, it was, as I remember, explained that the small communities that you were talking about, Unity and places like that, were actually the focus of the assistance. I come from a small town of 9,000 people, and we've got two gas stations where after hours, they have jobs, they pump gas. Those communities and the economies around them, I was less concerned about market dynamics being market dynamics, but the compelling case was those towns that have very few people, there isn't enough capacity to have somebody pumping gas at 2 in the morning and somebody being stranded. It was more of a safety and fairness argument that I remember. So could you help clarify, maybe I misunderstood, what was the purpose of the last bill then? How is this?
That allowed for retail sites
right
to be able to sell gasoline between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m.
But that's not happening now because they're in two small cities?
In some of those places, they don't have the equipment to allow that to happen. You have to have a way to turn on those pumps when nobody's around. And typically, people don't use credit or cash acceptors anymore. It's mostly credit cards. Well, in order to upgrade their facilities to allow access to Visas, MasterCard, that kind of thing, the cost was quite high. And so some of those small town operators didn't have the money
right
to spend $20,000 or $25,000 to upgrade their equipment.
And
so,
follow up on that.
Yeah.
The companies that provide the fuel, not the local provider at the pump, but there were no programs for upgrades through that stream?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Mr. Romaine, then we'll, Representative McClain.
Respond. There was another bill that was actually introduced, which was pulled, fortunately, which asked for a grant
mm-hmm.
from the state to upgrade the pumps. The attempt last time was to just try and see if this would work, see if you made it available, would it work? And it has in many locations. It hasn't in a number of locations. What we're doing right now is trying to make it economic so you actually can do it out in Eastern Oregon. That's why both bills are in there.
Representative McClain.
Well, that's what my question was, because I understand you to be, you know, you have that capacity already because you are a different facility. You are one that is already a membership facility.
As a card lock.
Yes.
Yes.
So
yes,
you can just flip the switch and use any card. So I get that part of it. The only part that bothers me is, what about those mom and pop still? I mean, because you become competition to them. So I just wait till it's nighttime and go to your facility. I mean, are we driving people out of the business so there's no competition?
I think some of those people are going to get out of the business anyway because of the cost. And so that's not necessarily the mom and pops, because they're the only ones they can't afford to hire people anyway. The self-serve bill should probably be one that would address those places that actually have employees, or they have the opportunity to have employees. But what I would say is that there are several opportunities in Eastern Oregon, and probably maybe down on the coast, where a card lock already exists. There is no retail to begin with, and so by allowing non-retail card locks to operate as retail, you would avail more people of the gasoline at the off hours, or any hour for that matter. So to say that it's expensive to get into the business, mm-hmm. and to say that a wholesaler who would go in and put a card lock next to a mom and pop operation, that, in my mind, that just isn't going to happen. You'd have to install tanks, all of the DEQ and EPA requirements for the dispensing equipment, you're looking at $150,000 investment. The mom and pop guy has already, in 1998, you guys had money available to upgrade service stations, and a lot of those mom and pops did that. This gentleman in Harper that I was talking about did just that. He has a special tank that is approved by DEQ, and so he's already made that investment. And so I don't think that you're going to see any marketers. I mean, there are fewer marketers all the time that are wholesalers like myself, and they're not going to invest $150,000 to $200,000 in a French Glen or a Harper or Unity. It just isn't going to happen because the volume is not there. If the gentleman Harper does 5,000 gallons a month, that's a good month for him. And you know, most places are doing that much a day in metropolitan areas.
Any other questions?
Did I answer your question?
You did. I still have a question, but I understand. Thank you.
I have a question as well, Representative Bentz will be here when we revisit this to go through a presentation that he has put together, and we will definitely be accommodating that. And I'm sorry you're not here at the same time, but he will be here to present this as well. The definition of county. If I look at this, Oregon counties by population that I just pulled up. The vast majority of these counties are over east, but I also see that Tillamook and Curry County fall into this definition.
And Clatsop.
And Clatsop. I think the initial the concept and the proposal was that this was going to be east of the mountains, but we're pulling in these counties. Can you address that conversation as well? We're changing the landscape in essence by I'm doing things a little broader. Correct.
Madam Chair, what we were trying to do is low population areas, mm-hmm. and the two areas that have low population, obviously Eastern Oregon, low population, and there are parts of the coast that have low population also. We picked that 40,000, I think that was the number, population number. It's an arbitrary
pick.
But
Lincoln and Clatsop is where the line is drawn. Everything,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it does make for some counties that in Eastern Oregon, for example, Umatilla, Deschutes, and Klamath don't qualify. They're over 40,000, so mm-hmm. that you cannot have self-service, although in Umatilla there is a reservation that has a truck stop that does have self-service. I know because I pulled into that station and sat there for a while waiting for somebody to come out and fill my tank. But but that's an arbitrary number. We tried to pick to incorporate as many counties in Eastern Oregon without specifically naming the counties. It may be if the decision is made, we name particular counties. I don't know if you can do that or not. Most of the legislation we've seen, it does by population.
Just wanted to draw attention to that fact.
Yeah.
That's an issue.
Mr. Walker, would you preview the next bill for us, please, the 2482?
House Bill 2482 allows a filling station, service station, garage, or other dispensary of Class 1 flammable liquids to allow self-dispensing 24 hours per day in counties with certified population of less than 40,000 residents. And if you would like, Chair, I could read off those counties.
Here. Gentlemen, I think we've opened the door to that, so please, if there's anything else to add there.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Romaine again. Those counties, again, are the same counties. There are three on the coast, two on the north coast, one on the south coast, Curry, and all of Eastern Oregon except for the three, Umatilla, Deschutes, and Klamath. What this does is recognize that to justify, we're trying to get to the point where somebody could afford to install the equipment necessary to do the self-service, and by making it available 24/7 rather than just 6 to 6, you give them more volume at the station and they can justify it a little bit better. I think Mr. Poole can speak to that particularly.
Mr. Poole.
Madam Chair, committee, Ralph Poole again. I am in favor of self-serve, have been for a long time, and I would say that a couple of reasons. One, allowing self-service in a small rural setting makes much more sense to those who are interested in economics, making sense for the dealer. With the raising costs of doing business, specifically labor, in Eastern Oregon, it's very tough to find labor, number one. Number two, with the higher cost of labor, it has a huge impact on those smaller volume units. To run an island attendant on an island 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of $10,000 to do that per month. When you divide that $10,000 over a unit that does 40,000 gallons a month, it has a substantial impact versus the high volume units that maybe do $200,000, and they do it with one island attendant as well. So the cost to dispense that fuel in small volume units is much higher per gallon than it is in larger operations. In rural Eastern Oregon, that has a huge impact on the consuming public, whether it be the traveler. Not so much that I worry about the traveler paying a few extra cents, but it's the local people. In rural areas, we have people who have to drive their children to school, and it might be 15, 20, 30 miles to get them to school. They have to go in to get groceries. They're typically ranchers, farmers, that kind of people. So the impact to them, because of the fact that they have no alternative method other than to drive, whether it be pickups or cars, they're not certainly going to be riding their bicycle, or they have no ability to jump onto mass transit if they're concerned about the cost of fuel. So an impact to rural areas is much greater, I feel, because of the rising costs, specifically of labor. This would allow that when those people that are running service stations that sell 50,000 gallons a month, they could cut $10,000 out of their budgets per month and allow for a lower price of fuel. I've been involved in this industry a long time, and I've heard so many different arguments about why we shouldn't do self-serve. One of them that has always stuck in the mind of a lot of people is safety. And I would beg to differ. If you go into, and I'm not going to pick on, let's say a mass marketer, you have them over here. We don't have them in rural Oregon. Like a Costco or a Fred Meyer or a large travel plaza that has high volume unit, you may see 10, 12, 15 dispensers. And you see one gentleman or lady out there running around from car to car starting the fuel. Well, generally speaking, in a non-self-serve application, the driver of the vehicle tends to become complacent about what's going on. They either go into the convenience store, they sit in their car, they're texting, they're doing whatever they're doing. And so virtually in Oregon, when you have those high volume units, you have an unattended fueling site happening all the time, because all the attendant is doing is running around and starting, grabbing a card, grabbing the cash, whatever, and starting the pump and looking for the next guy. In a self-serve application, and I ran self-serve gasoline service stations in Idaho, and generally speaking, the driver of the vehicle will get out, put his card in, activate the dispenser, and stay right there and make the sale, and then move on, either head out or go into the convenience store after the sale has been made. So you actually have someone who is standing there paying attention to what's going on. So in my mind, especially in the high-volume areas, you have some problems with safety that is not what most people envision. We allow, in the state of Oregon, self-service if you have a diesel vehicle.
Motorcycles,
classic cars. If you... And so we already, to a certain degree, are allowing some vehicles to serve themselves and customers. We have card locks now that, granted, you have to have training, but there are a lot of people that are not particularly professional truck drivers or professional drivers who are fueling their own vehicles just because they're associated with a company who has the ability to get a card. We have self-serve applications to a certain degree in certain areas of the state today. If there is no gasoline within a 7-mile radius of an operation and there is a card lock in that operation and no retail, you can get an exemption from the retail use. So we already at this point allow in very few cases self-service usage of dispensing equipment. Say in North Powder, Oregon, I know because I used to run that card lock. We had a card lock there. There was no gasoline outside of 7 miles or inside of 7 miles. Therefore, if we offer a credit card to that customer, they couldn't come in and use a Visa or MasterCard, but if I offered them a credit card and I carried the credit on the sale, they could come in and use it for their own use. So in my mind, we already have certain levels of self-service, and it makes sense to extend that into these other rural areas to allow for better access to the traveling public.
Representative McLean has a question.
Well, you just gave me another question. I had another one. But, okay, first of all, you've just described that we do have self-service in the state of Oregon in particular situations. Mm-hmm. And you gave us two or three different, you know, specific examples of that. And to me, you also used the word service station, which there's a difference between a card lot, a gas stop where you can just get fuel, and a service station. And so, again, options and choice. The state of Oregon up to this point has decided to have more than one scenario, more than one model. And so the question I'm asking you is that the old slippery slope argument here, that, you know, right now we specifically have choices. We have card lots, we have some self-service that we've given conditions to, and we've got service stations. And the people at my service station don't just put in the gas and then, goodbye, see ya, I'm on to the next car. They ask if they want my window actually, you know, washed, or they ask me if I ask them, can you check my tire? And they do. And so, to me, I'm trying to make sure that we're really looking at this for the purpose of making sure that people can get fuel when they need it, and also so business can flourish. I understand that part. But the question that I have here is, what is different between Eastern Oregon and Western Oregon as far as the idea that we have service stations, gas stops, and card lots? I mean, I want you to make a case for your last statement, which was that you believe self-service is the best way to go. And that's not what I thought this bill was all about.
Right. Madam Chair, Representative McLean, let me sort of put it. The difference is population and economics. Where you are in your area, there's a significant population, and each one of those service stations that you go to or have around in that area are going to have considerably more volume than most any station in the eastern part of the state, just because there's a significant population right there. So you can afford to do things. They can afford to have people on. They can afford to give you a lot of different choices. The problem in Eastern Oregon is, and I use Eastern Oregon, but it does apply in certain parts of the coast, is there are fewer and fewer people to service. Therefore, the station, the cost of operating becomes much more per gallon. So you have to figure out a way to sort of cut that back. Now, you do run the risk. There's a policy decision here. All right, I may be putting in jeopardy a job that's at this station. But if the station closes, then that job's in jeopardy anyway, and many more are. So what we're trying to do is figure out a balance that allows for gasoline to be available in the eastern part of the state and perhaps in the lower population counties on the coast, that recognizes that there's more than just the economics of a gas station job. It's how do you get fuel so the population can go about their normal everyday business. You will still have stations that will have attendants in Eastern Oregon. They will still, because that's what they will choose to do. Especially those that will have additional things attached, like a convenience store or some other thing like that. But you're at least giving more options for people to serve the people who are out there. And again, the reason we didn't apply this to Western Oregon, although because of the population issue, it gets applied in three places on the coast, was simply because the economics of full service are still there in the western part of the state. You still have population. That's not to say that we wouldn't jump at the chance, but we also realize we live in Oregon, and I would have to get a condominium to move out of my house if I did in Western Oregon get self-service. But it's just one of those things. On the safety issue, Ralph talked a little bit about the safety issue. I'll give you a quick story. The last gas station to basically be disrupted or destroyed because of service involved my wife. She was not my wife at the time, but she pulled into a station on McAdam in Portland. The attendant came. It was summer of 83. The attendant came. She filled up the tank. She gave him her card. He put the pump in, started it. He goes inside. When the shuts off, he writes up the bill, comes out, gives her the Visa card. She signs. He walks away, and she drives off. Somebody forgot to pull the pump out, and she pulled over. It was before the breakaway pumps, and she pulled over the pump. And literally, the fire engines came. She had to hose down the whole thing. She calls me. I run over there, tell her not to say anything to anybody. And we get out of there. I'm an attorney.
Well, Kate, I'm sorry. I have
follow
to,
up.
I don't want to have this debate. I just wanted to be clear about that. We all have our stories.
Oh yeah.
I was out of state doing my first self-serve. Had eight kids in the car for a national speech tournament, and all of a sudden some wind came up and took the fuel pump right out of my took the hose right out of my hand, and so there was gas flipping all over the place with that particular. So I don't want to go there. I wanted to make it clear that I thought we had a very definite purpose for safety and making sure that fuel was available where needed and businesses can flourish. Yeah. I get that part.
Yeah. Vice Chair Vile.
I think Mr. Romaine kind of answered it, but I want to follow up on Representative McLean's observations and ask a question. You've obviously been in the business a long time. Would there be a demand for that more full service concept that if, just thinking out of the box, we as a state said we are going to allow that slippery slope to take us wherever it might take us, and most stations went completely self-serve all across the state? Is there enough of a demand for that full service element that we would have folks willing to pay extra to have their gas pumped for them and to have their windows washed and their tire checked, et cetera?
I would say that it's going to be very difficult in Eastern Oregon to find units that have the volume that would justify putting an island attendant on staff just to go out and do that. Oftentimes, convenience stores have two attendants working in the convenience store, and so there would be access to an individual to go out and help those who really need it, the handicapped person. My wife is handicapped and has a handicap sticker. She goes to a service station. Of course, they know her, and they are tickled to death to help her at all times, day or night. I think that you would find that type of an activity and access for those people who really need it would be available. When you say, is there enough demand? It depends on the population. I don't think there would be enough demand in a small county like ours. You just wouldn't. the people that I know, the people that are buying fuel, are concerned about the dollar. We're from the poorest county in the state, and most of the traveling public in that area are looking for the best price, and they don't really care. They don't expect anybody to wash their windshields. You're very fortunate, I would have to say, because there are not many
service stations. It's a great service station.
There are not many service stations anymore. Service stations. They are convenience stores. They are truck stops. And in most cases, you don't have that luxury of someone coming up saying, can I wash your windshield? Can I clean your headlights? I grew up doing that, and so that's the way I did business when I was 15, 16 years old working for my father. But those days have moved on, you just don't have that access to that. And I think in order for a service station in a small community that sells 30, 40, 50,000 gallons a month, to have them have a person on staff to, you'd have to be charging 20, 25 cents a gallon more. And I just don't think there's a tremendous amount of population that's willing to pay 20, 25 cents. I see my customers or my dealer's customers traveling down the street for a 2 cent differential. And so to have a price that was 25 cents a gallon higher to justify that person is very difficult, especially in a smaller area.
Gentlemen, we're spending an inordinate amount of time here, which is a very important conversation. We have two more people in the queue for questions, and we have two more witnesses. So what I'd like to do, if Representative Witt would like to ask his question, if brief answers would be appreciated, and then we'll move on to our another panel of witnesses after Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try and be as quick as I can.
Thank you.
I was wondering if our panelists would consider a ceiling on the monthly volume of sales in order to qualify for the self-service. The reason I state this, I was shocked this past September when I was on my way over to visit Representative Barreto and his family. I pulled into a service station, or lack thereof, in Hermiston, and found myself having to pump my own gasoline. And I can tell you that truck stop would make all of the gas stations in my hometown look like a drop in the bucket in terms of the volume that they were pumping out in a late evening hours. And I thought, this is not what we intended, at least certainly not myself as a legislator. I'm very sympathetic to people needing fuel in rural Oregon at odd hours. I have no question about that. But what we attempted to do, I don't think we were trying to accommodate the quote-unquote everyday business concerns of mass marketers of fuel.
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, we actually did consider that last time, and it was sort of easy to just say 40,000 and see where it went because we limited the hours and stuff like that. But we had talked about that within the industry, about maybe setting a gallonage amount that was such that your smaller stations in the rural areas were covered, and then even maybe expanding where that was, but just making it a gallonage limit. Again, the gallonage thing, we debated gallonage and we debated population. We came on population because it's sort of, all right, Eastern Oregon. But that is a very legitimate issue on, certain large volume places. That was not the intent to move self-service into that area. It really is to give it to the areas where you can need it.
Madam Chair, just a comment, Paul. Thank you for that. I really appreciate the fact that you more or less validate the concern that I had, that was not what we had intended originally.
Representative Wilson.
Could I answer that real quickly?
Quickly,
Madam
please.
Chair, Representative Witt, I think that you would want to make that on an annual basis, not on a monthly basis. Especially in eastern Oregon, you have huge swings between the middle of winter and the middle of summer.
Understood. Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, I'll defer.
Okay. Representative Brown.
Just a quick comment. I have a couple letters here from gas station owners up in Wallowa County. And, you know, here you're right about the cost of gas going up in these small towns because they do have to pay someone to pump it. And so from La Grande, you go to Imbler, Elgin, Wallowa, Lostien, Enterprise. And as you go up, it's incrementally more expensive at all of these places. And so here you have these small towns where you have these people that are just eking out a living, and then to raise the cost of living in these areas, too, is an argument that hasn't been brought forward. So.
Thank you, sir. Gentlemen, thank you. We will be revisiting this when Representative Vince returns, so we appreciate your comments.
We'll work on some suggestions and see if we can put a package together that is acceptable to everyone.
Well, I guess I would add a comment then, since you're going off to work on this. If you look at the rural counties on the coast, they're different than the rural counties over east. They are small communities, but they're more dense in how they are situated. So they really are not the same, even though the county populations are small. So I think that's something to take into consideration as well. How you choose to come forward with a proposal, we'll see. But it's different.
Oh, volume may end up being the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you. I would like to call up Mr. Campbell, Mr. MacArthur, and Mr. Rosa, please. We still have one more bill to hear and an informational hearing, gentlemen. So,
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA. This issue is always a tricky one for AAA. We have a vast variety of opinions of our members. Some of them, really, they fall into three categories. One, that desperately want to pump their own gas all the time anywhere. Those who really cannot pump their own gas. And then those who really want to have their gas pumped for them. What this bill is, and we're working, by the way, with the gas station folks to come up with an amendment that will make this good for us, and so we promise that we'll do that diligently, and we anticipate we'll have amendments that will take care of that. The bottom line is we want to make sure that we have fuel available for our members when they're traveling, whether locally or otherwise, and we know that there are certain areas in the state where that doesn't happen very easily after hours. And we understand the economics associated with that during the traditional working day. So we're very likely to come down in support of the bill in the end when we have the amendments that take care of the problem. I was going to share an interesting anecdote about me at 5 o'clock in the morning down in Klamath County, but I'm not going to do that for sake of time. But thank you very much for your consideration of this issue. Hopefully we'll take care of our members who can't get fuel otherwise. Thank you.
Mr. Campbell, I just misspoke. I have teleported myself to next Wednesday's agenda. We do not have an informational hearing today. I am looking at the wrong page. So my apologies.
Madam Chair,
Walker and I will get this down soon. Yes.
I'm not terribly sure you want to give me carte blanche to continue.
Well, I think Mr. Mather may have just had a heart attack back in the back row there, and I wanted to make sure he was knew he was off the hook.
Well, then I'll add just
my apologies.
AAA's policy nationally, and by the way, there are only two states in the union that have self-serve gas: us in New Jersey, and it's been a proud tradition in Oregon. But AAA's policy is as long as you are allowing service to be provided for those who cannot serve their own gas, we are okay with self-service. That does not mean that all of our members are okay with self-service. They want at least the option of having it, but especially in certain rural areas where you don't really have as much access to fuel when you need it, and as much as that might be good for lodging folks who would love to have you spend the night because you ran out of gas, it's not really in the best interest of our members to have that happen to them. So thank you very much for allowing me to come and speak to you today.
Delighted. Thank you, sir. Mr. Rosa, welcome.
Thank you. Chair McCune, members of the committee, my name is Jerome Rosa, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, which represents agriculture's beef, which is Oregon's number one agricultural industry. OCA supports House Bill 2482 and 2458. The geography of eastern Oregon creates many challenges for residents in rural parts of the state. These bills will allow more flexibility and give fuel for these families and businesses. We appreciate Rep. Bence's efforts, and we hope you'll pass these two bills. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Chair McEwen, Vice Chair Meek, Vice Chair Vile. I'm Mike MacArthur, Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties, also a resident of Sherman County, and I've got both hats on here today. I'm one of 1,750 residents of Sherman County, approximately. I haven't checked births and deaths this week. So I'm here in support of both 2458 and 2482. AOC supports both of these bills to expand self-service in Oregon. I want to tell you a little bit about one example of how this works in one part of rural Oregon. In Sherman County, we have self-service fuel for the members of the Mid-Columbia Producers Co-op. This is an example. This is my card that I use at the Wasco self-serve fuel stop. And it's been available to co-op members in Sherman County since 1996, and we got legislation that created the hardship provision of the 7 miles that Mr. Poole referred to. Fuel availability in our part of the state is pretty scarce. From Biggs Junction, there occasionally is a station in Chanticleer, but not often, and you go all the way to Madras, 92 miles, to get gas. So there are no retail facilities in that stretch of a major state highway. One of the reasons there is no fuel is because of federal and state regulation in late 80s, early 90s that increased the requirements for underground fuel storage tanks that have essentially forced those businesses out of business. And what happened is many of those station owners just walked away from their stations. They ended up coming back to the county as foreclosed property and contaminated property. So there wasn't enough business to improve those facilities to make them viable economically, so they went away. And into the breach stepped our grain co-op, Mid-Columbia Producers, largest grain co-op in the state, diversified into seed, fuel, fertilizer, other things. Anyway, Mid-Columbia Producers offered fuel to its members, farmers, but under the restrictions for non-retail, the local citizens in the towns of Sherman County couldn't access those until we got the legislation in 95, 96 that allowed this hardship exemption under a conditional use permit for locals to be able to access the facility. So now all the people in Sherman County, or anyone, any of you, could go get a membership at Sherman County at the Mid-Columbia Producers and get a card, and when you're traveling in that area, access their facilities. They actually have about 14 facilities because they have some Pacific Pride facilities as well. So this is the hardship provision. You can see if there's no retail within 7 miles, then a non-retail facility can't offer fuel to members. The safety issue often comes up around this. These pumps that we use at our facilities have breakaway nozzles, and so if something happens like the story that Paul just told about somebody driving away, actually the nozzle breaks off the end of the hose and quits dispensing fuel. I tested it once and it works.
Full disclosure, Mr. MacArthur.
I asked the co-op manager if they've had any problems in his memory with safety injury or accidents, people pumping their own fuel. Nothing's happened in that span of time. One of the wrinkles that we've got right now with the way the law stands is if you go up to the farm store in Wasco and need gas to get to the next town and you aren't a member, they can't sell you anything. It's a non-retail facility under a conditional use permit. They aren't even able to sell you gas if you ask for it. So expanding the flexibility, allowing more ways to get fuel in rural Oregon where it's not economically viable to have the facilities with all the requirements that those storage tanks and so forth have to have, and to install the reader cards and the pumps that read the cards is a very expensive proposition. And so expanding it to 24 hours would make it more possible for those facilities to operate. So I encourage you passing both these bills.
Mr. MacArthur, I'm not sure if this is a question for you. It may be a question for Mr. Romaine. I keep seeing the word safety go by
I understand there are 48 other states who do not have self-serve. Do we have regulations that provides a different type of equipment for them or for us because they provide self-serve and we do not? What's the difference?
48 states who do provide
sorry, self-serve. My apologies. Cold medicine has just got this fog right here. I'm sorry about that. What's
Madam
the
Chair,
difference?
I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't know.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Wilson, Carl Wilson, Mr. Wilson, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
No more cold medicine
and
for me.
I hope you get feeling better.
Thank you.
That sounds tough.
My apologies.
Just a comment about safety for a moment. Every couple of years, I ride back to the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, where you have between 500,000 and 650,000 motorcycle riders in various stages of sobriety and sanity, all filling up their tanks several times a day, and there is never a problem. I mean, no blown-up gas stations, and you're talking about people getting off their bikes, smoking cigarettes while they're pumping. I mean, you know, you got the whole thing. But there are no blow-ups, and it's just incredibly safe. And so just wanted to underscore that. Also, accessibility. There is a two-pump automatic unmanned station on the border between Nevada and Utah. It's a little hamlet called Baker, Nevada. And if you leave Cedar City, Utah after dinner time and head to Ely, Nevada, hopefully you have enough to make it to Baker. But when you do, there's a station that is manned during the day, but they close down. And so we use this two-pump station in the middle of nowhere. And it's just literally a godsend. You know, we couldn't continue the trip were it not for that. And so these things, just the accessibility makes all the difference in the world. So we really appreciate it.
Mr. Romain, do you mind? Thank you, Craig. I'm just curious, is there something different in the regulatory structure around ours as opposed to states where there is self-serve that creates this safety issue that keeps coming up?
Madam Chair, the quick answer is no. The equipment is the same throughout the 50 states. It's not. And the second thing I wanted to say is please don't smoke around the gas tank when you're filling it.
Never do.
Carl didn't say he did. He just
We're worried about Representative Wilson's friends, though. Thank you, Mr. Romain.
Thank you.
Questions for this panel? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. We will be revisiting this issue when Representative Benz returns. So I will close the public hearing on House Bills 2482 and 2458, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2462, and I would like to call up Mr. Russell. Thank you for being here, Bob. Mr. Walker, yes, would you please enlighten us as to what this bill is about?
House Bill 2462 provides increased weight limits for trucks with fully functional idle reduction systems and trucks that use natural gas as a fuel source. We have not requested a revenue or fiscal, so we're just going to have a public hearing today.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Walker. Mr. Russell?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I guarantee you this bill is not nearly as controversial as the last two that you heard.
Thank you.
For all practical purposes, the federal government regulates truck sizes and weights throughout the country. So it literally takes an act of Congress to change truck weights. And in November of 2015, Congress did just that. And they authorized the states to increase truck weights if the truck is equipped with an auxiliary power unit. This allows the driver to turn off the main engine and still have air conditioning, heating, cooking, all the stuff that drivers do in trucks when they're parked. It also allows an increase in truck weights of 2,000 pounds if the truck is using natural gas as a fuel. The fuel tanks for natural gas are much heavier because the gas is under pressure. What this does is it actually removes a disincentive for our customers for us to use these devices, because it doesn't reduce the weight that we can carry in terms of cargo. So it's a pretty easy bill. We have one letter of support from a company by the name of Clean Energy. I think that's on OLIS. I think there's other folks in the room that are supportive, and I don't know that I'm not aware of any opposition. And normally I would turn back and ask ODOT to say if they're okay. They are responsible for maintaining the roads, and truck weights, of course, are a big concern to them. And I do not believe they have any issue with this particular bill.
Could you educate me we're talking about natural gas powered. Is that LNG and compressed gas both?
It would include both.
Okay. Yes. Thank you for that clarification. Yes, Representative McLean.
My understanding, Mr. Russell, is that the reason that you're asking for this is because the federal government has said that because of these technologies and these systems weighing a little more, that we actually need to do that to be able to make the trucks legal on the road.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, that's true, without reducing our cargo carrying capacity, so it doesn't negatively impact our customers.
Any other questions? Wow.
Pretty easy.
Sweet. Thank you, Mr. Russell.
Thank you very much.
Is anyone else in the audience interested in speaking to this bill? Now's your chance. All right. Then I am going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2462. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2292. And, Mr. Walker, would you please refresh us on what this House bill does?
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 2292 conforms Oregon law with federal law and rules regarding the fixed guideway public transportation system. If you'll remember, we heard this bill on February 1st, and a fixed guideway public transportation system, essentially all they're talking about are the rails. So this includes the light rail, trolleys, things of that nature. We have a revenue statement, a fiscal statement. There's no revenue impact, and there's no fiscal impact. And this bill is ready to go.
Great. Thank you. Vice Chair Meek?
Yes, Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 2292 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 2292 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, would the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Pyle?
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. And the motion passes. Vice Chair Meek, would you like to carry this bill to the floor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be very happy to.
All right, sir. Our first bill is out the door. Anything for the good of the order this morning? All right, ladies and gentlemen. On that note, we are adjourned. Thank you. Next week will be Sans. Thank you. Next week will be.